David Shapiro is in New York, and it's such a pleasure to be welcoming him today on a day when, I guess, David, we are looking back on a fantastic week for American shares. So you're in the right place, right time. I know you visit there often, family based over in the United States. What's the mood like there, though? We've got the S&P and the Dow getting to a new record. Interest rates now starting to fall in America for the first time in a few years. Are people upbeat? Are they excited about it?
It's crazy that there's still so much concern about where the economy is going, even though the S&P is at record highs and markets are very strong. It's taking the market time or commentators to adjust to this. And there's still a lot of politics in this country. And, you know, if you turn on TV, it's all about Kamala and it's all about Donald Trump and talking about the economy. And I think that's becoming a big influence. Trump saying that, the economy in tatters, America in tatters. So there's still a little bit of disbelief, but I think slowly, I believe that the interest rate cuts that we see now and more to come are going to start giving this market a lift. And I think where I see the benefit of that is in commodity prices and also in the dollar going weaker and so on. So I think that it's going to take time. But by the end of this year, I expect this market to be much stronger than we are at the moment. But there's an adjustment period.
That's an interesting comment, David, because the S&P 500 at a record, the Dow at a record as well, and yet you expect it to go higher still. Just explain that to us.
Well, we've come through 3-4 years, very difficult years. And I don't think we realize how difficult they have been, the disruptions that COVID caused in terms of supply chain, factories closing, pushing up inflation. And credit to the central bankers. I know we criticize them for week after week, month after month, but I think they've come through with flying colors, and inflation is starting to come down. Now the worry is that interest rates are too high for an economy to pick up. And there is concern about employment, whether if they keep interest rates too high, that employment will start to fall. And that of course, affects, not only does it affect consumers, but it also affects business investment. So you want to create an environment now where interest rates are high enough for savers, but not that high that it inhibits investment and it inhibits investors taking a little bit of risk. So we've got to get to that neutral point. No one knows where it is. But I think the comfort, as Powell said, is that we're in a position now where he can reduce interest rates. He's not forced to do so because of any crisis like we saw at the in 2007, 2008, or at the turn of the century with the internet bubble bursting. We're not facing a crisis. We're facing a slowdown, but not a crisis. So I think as rates come down, you're going to find a change in attitudes. People get more money in the back pocket, and like, they're going to spend it. And also householders have de-geared. They're not under pressure as they might have been. So I expect housing to pick up. I expect all of those areas that we haven't seen perform over the last couple of years starting to show some fall.
This has got to be good for banks. And I'll tell you why. I'm a very happy Investec client. Okay, I like Investec. It's a good client. But today I got my note from Investec to say rates are down by 0.25% here in South Africa. 25 basis points in South Africa, 50 basis points in America. Okay. Your overdraft has now gone to 11.5%, and your credit that you're going to earn on your money has gone down to 0.5%. So, they were giving us 3/4 in the past. Now that's gone down by a third, whereas the overdraft has gone down fractionally. Banks must like this kind of environment because that means that their margins are going to be a bit better.
Yeah. You dish right. That is going to happen. It's going to take time before they're quick to reduce the rates that you're going to earn, but not the rates that they're charging you. But Alec, where are you dead right? And I think where it's going to reflect, if you looked at the bank results Even Investec's results, you know, even if you go through them, First Rand's results, Standard Bank, there's not much activity. And we need improving economies to create activity where companies go out and spend, you know, whether it's building new factories, buying new machinery. And we need that environment to come back again. I think it's going to come back in the U.S. I expect that next year is going to be a very strong year for mergers and acquisitions, M&A, as you know they term it. So I think from that point of view, we need banks thrive in that environment. They thrive in an environment of growth, and it will take a bit of time for that to filter through, but it is going to filter through. You know, everything's pointing in the right direction.
You're in the US, you do visit there often, you've been watching markets in South Africa for over half a century. They say that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. How's it going to rhyme now in the next, say, year or so, given that interest rates are now in a declining cycle? What can we look out for?
For better markets. Where we've got a bit of conflict at the moment, which might be confusing, is that Europe is under pressure at the moment. You know, I was reading Christine Lagarde, and she was complaining or pointing out that things are not quite in sync because of COVID. And I think Europe's taking more of a knock than America. America's quite self-sufficient, but Europe relies heavily on China. It relies on growth, you know, particularly if you look at Europe and if you look at France and the luxury stocks. If you look at Germany and the motor industry, if you look at their industrial side, you know, they make heavy machinery. The Germans are not big spenders. They're not a consumer nation. So they're under a bit of pressure. And I think that's been reflected in a lot of the companies that are on the JSE. What I am beginning to like is that commodity markets are picking up. This, to me, was the one worry. I know China is now looking at stimulus. I haven't seen the full headlines today, but I believe they've reduced rates there, but looking to get their economy going. And I think once we get that going, then commodities will pick up as well. So what I'm trying to say is that if you look at the JSE, there's a big market in small and medium cap shares. There's plenty of activity taking place there, but it's not necessarily reflected heavily in the index, which is made up of all those foreign stocks and large cap stocks. That will take time. So it'll work its way through, you know. So I think you could just be bullish, you know, take that money out of those savings accounts and start to buy stocks.
Region Bull, back in form. Dave, it's an interesting point that you make there about the small and medium caps on the JSE and so many international companies listed, or rather so many of South Africa's major JSE listed companies are offshore in essence. There's a company called Primary Health Properties, PHP, which I see as of today was telling us on the Stock Exchange News Service that, hurrah, we are in the JSE All Share Index and in the JSE All Property Index. Now, what, digging a little deeper, what kind of baffles me here? This is a company with zero exposure to South Africa. It's on the FTSE 250. It's got properties in the UK looking to go into Ireland, which are related to the national health insurance in the UK. What the heck is it doing in a index in South Africa? It, you know, to me, I must have missed something, Dave. What's going on here?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think we're easy pickings. There's plenty of money floating around looking for a home. And I think that, you know, the foreigners, they love to get on the plane. They love South Africa. They love Cape Town. They love to go to the bush, whatever it is. So it's a lovely place to come and sell something. Alec, I always like to give these businesses time. You know, it's how many foreign businesses foreign companies are listed on the JSE. Not those that we've gone out, like Bukini's gone into Spain and a lot of the other companies, you know, NEPI have gone into Eastern Europe and so on. That's my choice. This is where foreigners have come here and said, okay, you know, this is a country that loves property. Let's, you know, let's raise money here. We don't know enough about it. And I think we've got a history of companies that have come here and let us down. I can't remember them offhand because this was a decade plus ago. and I don't want to get mixed up. But, you know, the Hammersons of this world, we know because that came out of Liberty. You know, those had their, not Hammerson, you know, the other property companies, they had their origins in local businesses. But this one, I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, you've got to give it time. And I like to watch CEOs over time, not, oh, this looks like a great balance sheet. This looks like a wonderful business. You've got to measure them. You know, just like I always say, it's like finding a partner in life. You know, you can't marry her the next day. You marry someone, have a wonderful night out, and then, you know, get a ring. You go out and get a ring and want to marry the next day. It takes time to understand and learn companies. So we watched this one. I'm with you. A little bit of skepticism. That doesn't mean that's not negative. That's just being cautious. So,
well, we should.
You're right.
We should have been a bit more cautious on Mike Lomas. So let me just bring you up to date here. On Friday, he arrived back in South Africa in a wheelchair, being pushed through OR Tambo with a posse of policemen around him. Mike Lomas, you and I will remember from the early noughties, 2001 to 2007, he was the CEO of Group 5. He then got himself involved after retiring from there with a company called Tubular Construction, which, well, they're alleged to have defrauded Eskom of 1.4 billion rand. The whole thing was exposed when Paul O'Sullivan was approached by the BEE shareholder in Tubular, a guy who had 35% of the shares, had never paid a cent for them, and then wanted to know, hang on, you got this big deal with Medupi, why aren't I getting any money from it? And was then told that they were operating at a loss. So he asked O'Sullivan to look into it, and so O'Sullivan did. And out of the woodwork pops Mike Lomas. Now, David, that's a guy who we used to come into the studio often when we were doing that radio show. We remember him well. What a sad end. And he had to be extradited, by the way. He was not prepared to come back and even work with the state. He was extradited back at the age of 78. Wow.
I find it very odd. You know, it just shows, I mean, we remember Marcus Huster very well. So, but during that period, it was a particularly strong period. There was a time I started a 2010 fund simply because Thabo Mbeki said that they were going to spend 150 billion on infrastructure. Doesn't sound like a lot in today's terms, but at the turn of the century, it was in the early 2000s. And it was, you know, it was obvious that all the construction companies were going to benefit, Group 5 being one of them. Remember, they had their headquarters just off the M1 as you round the bend on the way to Pretoria. Wonderful and a very well-established business that also, you know, found hard times after things began to slow down. But Mike was a character. You know, I don't know whether it comes with mining and construction that you get these real tough guys. But I never had any reason to suspect anything wrong with Mike. And, you know, when you went to a party with him or you went to a cocktail, I can't remember who was the piano player that was always sat down at the piano. And I can't remember.
Brett Keble was quite a piano player. He
was
a
great
pianist.
I just seem to have a recollection of someone sitting down at the piano and being great piano, whether it was Mike or not. But it's rather sad that, you know, it comes to this after a long, illustrious career in that. And why one has to go that way, I don't know. I don't know. There's so many people who are so clever, so good, that don't need to, you know, do these kind of deals or you know, look to make money that way. I don't know.
It is all done even in
Brett,
the period about when Medupi
was
made.
Brett was a smart man. Yeah.
Brett Keble.
I say Brett was a smart man, yeah. You know, very entertaining, great character, but that's a warning sign for us. Anybody can sit down at a piano and tell jokes. And
careful, yeah. But David, wasn't it also a period where, because this happened kind of in the mid-teens, 2015, 16, 17, when Medupi and Kusile were being constructed, it is almost a period like it was a free-for-all. You had the Guptas in charge. They were plundering like crazy. And Eskom, well, the Eskom manager a guy called Franz Clarkoudi, was so he was so brazen. He had a 715 million rand signatory signing powers. Imagine this, 715 million rand signing powers as the as a project manager or the project manager. So when these crooks, facilitated by Lomas, wanted to get a project for 1.5 billion, it was too high. It would have to have gone to the board. So they then cut it back to 708 million rand and then promised that they'd pay him. Yeah, they pay him the rest through fictitious invoices. I mean, that's just like, come on, guys. This is class one type of bribery and corruption.
It is such low level. And I think the reason they got away with it is that the levels of corporate governance here were such that they knew they wouldn't be detected. You know, it was a chummy situation. South Africa has been, I think that's been the basis of the corporate governance breaches here, that there hasn't been that watchdog. And, you know, lucky there are people like Paul O'Sullivan who've just continued to fight relentlessly against these kind of issues. And Alicat's, you know, it's years and years of this that we have to reverse in South Africa. But for a chaps like Mike, you know, to have been part of it, it's difficult to understand, you know, what he thought he'd get away with. Because eventually it comes out. You know, if you're 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you know, it comes out. And just sad. We've got good businessmen in South Africa. You know what? I mean, we've been treating good businessmen. They don't need to go down that route.
Well, that was my question, really. Here's a guy who would have been financially secure in any way you look at it after being the CEO for that long. Group 5 was still thriving at the time that he left in 2007. His share options would have been worth a fortune. It only went bust in 2019. But maybe, who knows, Dave, maybe there was funny business going on inside Group 5 itself. Just to close off with, there was an announcement today on a pretty thin SENS reporting day, given that tomorrow is a public holiday. But there's an announcement from Hyprop, another property company, that it sold its shopping centers in Nigeria and Ghana. We did hear in their results or see in their results that that was coming. This is perhaps another reflection of South African companies getting a hiding when they go up into West Africa.
It's been such an attraction to go up into Africa, to expand your businesses. But I think we've learned from Woolworths, we've learned from so many other businesses, from Nampak, how difficult it is. And I can understand that they're retreating. I think especially with South Africa, likely to pick up. There's no need to have these operations. And I think also they've expanded to a point where I think they need to shrink back and focus, as we're seeing with Growth Point now, and other property companies, you know, rather shrink back, rather than expanding sideways and accumulate a huge number, just concentrate on those that are profitable and likely to be profitable into the future. So it's probably just a normal course in a company's history. But, you know, especially with the depreciation of their currencies and that, this is, Nigeria has proved to be a really tough playing field, you know, playing ground, should I say. A lot of people come with their tail between their legs. I think even Mr. Price, Woolworths, all of them have come back from
ShopRite,
you know, from Nigeria.
Yeah, ShopRite. Remember, Dwight Mbison had to close up there. Ghana was a cemetery for Absa. They had to take a big knock on in Ghanaian bonds. Yeah, you better be careful when you are straying. Just because we're also Africans doesn't mean that we actually understand how business is done in those countries.
No, they're 50 Dave countries south of Sahara.
Exactly. 53 on the continent.
Each with a different government, each with a different set of rules. It's not easy territory.
And just to close off with, we're going to talk to you next week in the US. How long are you over there with family?
I'm here until October the 18th. I'm going up to Boston on the 2nd or 3rd, but next week I'm still here. Mm-hmm. I just want to point out one thing. Just might be of interest. Apple released their new phone on, I think, Friday. There's an Apple store just up the road here on Broadway. It was packed, Alec. It was absolutely packed with pre-orders and that. And what intrigued me is I looked at who orders these phones at this ridiculous price. And there's a certain, you know, there's a certain profile. It's all young men between 20, 30, and those age. They're the ones who are lining up with the phones. They were not old people of my age. There were not, funny enough, very few females, but mainly it's just those are the ones who love their phone and who actually make full use of it. You know, they're the ones who understand AI and understand the gaming and that. But the place was packed.
Well, maybe it's time to be looking at those Apple shares again. I'm sure you will be doing your homework on it. And David Shapiro will be on the ground there in the US for the next few weeks. We look forward to catching up with him every Monday. Thank you, Dave. Enjoy, love to the family, and we'll pick up again in a week's time. David Shapiro is with Sasfin, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.